more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. If you're listening to this on the internet, the recording of this, I've just shown the Susan Boyle video clip from Britain's Got Talent. It's kind of popular culture, one that it's easy to parody. I came across this little cartoon recently, and this is a cartoon based on, here we are, the lengths people go to. The man says, "If I stand on my head, will you love me?" So he literally takes his head off and stands on it. And then that's yes, yes, that's three yeses from the jury of Britain's Got Talent. People go to any lengths to get on television. Thank you. You can understand. We've been subjected to all kinds of wannabes with very little talent. And you can understand the scepticism to some extent when Susan Boyle stepped onto that stage. What I think shocked me was the aggression of the audience at first, the sheer venom in that audience, that they were falling off their seats laughing at her and pebbles at Kat. I found that quite shocking. Okay, within a few bars of the song, they were already on their feet applauding, and rightly so. It was a stunning performance. But there's been some reaction. A feminist writes in The Guardian. Now, you know I'm in deep water when I start quoting this, don't you? Commented about that, and she says, "Why are we so shocked when, in inverted commas, ugly women can do things rather than sitting at home weeping and wishing they were somebody else? Men are allowed to be ugly and talented. And then she goes on with a long list of men with some caustic comments. And then she goes on to the jury how Simon Cowell, now buffed to the sheen of an ornamental pebble, asked this strange creature, this alien, how old she was. "I'm nearly 47, she said. Simon rolled his eyes until they threatened to roll out of his head down the aisle and out into the streets. The audience reaction was equally disgusting. They giggled with embarrassment. And when Susan said she wanted to be a professional singer, the camera spun to a young girl who seemed to be at least half mascara. As if, they all said." And then there's no way that this insane Scottish spinster, beloved only of pebbles, the cat, she said, could make it. And then, of course, she sang. And it was over to Amanda Holden. And this is quite caustic. I ask forgiveness. It's over to Amanda Holden, a woman most notable for playing a psychotic hairdresser in a Manchester Hair Extensions saga, cutting it. "I'm so thrilled," said Amanda, "because I know that everyone was against you." "Everyone was against you," she said, as if Susan might have been hanged for her presumption. "Why? Can't ugly people dream, you fat, packed, hair ironed, over plucked, monstrous fool?" Bit sharp. "We see this all the time in popular culture," and she goes on. "Susan will probably win Britain's Got Talent. She'll be a little munter that could sing, served up for the British public every Saturday night. Look, it's ugly, it sings. And I know that we think that this will make us better people. But Susan Boyle will be the freakish exception that makes the rule. By raising this Susan up, we will forgive ourselves for grinding every other Susan into the dust. It will be a very partial and poisoned redemption, because Britain's got malice. Sing, Susan, sing to an ugly crowd that doesn't deserve you." Don't know what you make of that. Of all the comments I read, that was the one that caught my attention the most. Wasn't it always thus, I thought? People have always catcalled those doomed and popular because of their looks or beliefs. Freak shows always drew a crowd, now they draw a TV documentary. Susan Boyle didn't bother with makeup, and when they questioned it, she said, well, what's wrong with being Susan Boyle? Good answer. I think they're probably just setting her up to knock her down. Who knows whether she'll have a career or not. But here's the point. She was treated like she was something from outer space, but she wasn't. She didn't need their patronizing. She happens to be a genuinely superb singer. What's it James Morrison sang? I'm not running, I'm not hiding. If you dig a little deeper, you will find me. I'm not lost, just undiscovered. Though there was lostness there, but I don't think it was in Susan. I think it was in the audience. What would Jesus think of that ugliness? Not hers, the audience. Britain's got talons. In the old days, they threw tomatoes, stones, and dead cats at people they didn't like. Now they just laugh spitefully. I just felt immensely proud of her and deeply sad for my nation when I saw that. Now, it brought back to me the words of Jesus. In Luke chapter 19, verse 10, Jesus said, for the Son of Man, that's him, came to seek and to save what was lost. I came to seek and to save what was lost. And my thoughts went back also to Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 to 38. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And that struck me forcibly. They were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. A friend of mine, a pastor I knew, Susan and I were working in Brazil, in a city called Campo Grande. It's going back many years now, 20, 30 years ago, when technology was quite new, and answer machines were, you know, these modern answer machines were quite new as well. He got hold of one of these things, and he advertised around the time a thing called Telepeace. Basically, he said, you know, if you're troubled and you would like prayer, ring this number. There's a little message on it for you from the Bible. Leave your name and your address, your telephone number, and we'll pray for you and we'll get in touch with you. This seemed like a nice idea at the time. Well, it was a nice idea. But poor Elias had the shock of his life. He was discovering 100 people a day were ringing his telephone line and asking for assistance and for prayer. And I remember him in absolute despair. The man was fraught. He was ragged. He had a large church already. He had no way that he or his staff could keep up with all these people needing, wanting prayer. And I remember Jesus. He looked on the crowds and he had compassion on them because they were lost. They were harassed and helpless. Not to say that what they were doing was right, not to say that what they were living, not to say their moral standards were correct or their religious life was in place. It wasn't that. It wasn't that he was condoning what they were doing. It was just that Jesus saw they had lost their moral and spiritual compass. They were going round in circles. And this, you just see the way my mind wanders, don't you? I then began to think about Wales and my country and my nation. And if you're a visitor here, I'd like you to have mercy on Wales and pray for it. September 2008, a report by the Welsh Cancer Intelligence and Surveillance Unit said that per head of population, Wales has the highest cancer incidence in the world for both men and women. In March 2009, a report said that Wales has the worst dementia care in the UK, just 14 places per 1,000 people over 75 compared to 30 in northeast of England and 20 elsewhere. December 2007 said that Welsh teenagers were worst in the world for maths, worst in the UK for maths and reading. In March 2007, the Times Higher Educational Supplement reported that Wales has the worst housing in Britain and the oldest in Europe. In April 2009, a report said that in comparison with 40 other countries, Wales has the highest incidence of 13-year-olds who say they have been drunk at least twice, a quarter of them. And that's the same whether it's boys or girls. 1.5% of all admissions in Wales in hospitals are due to alcohol. In July 2008, a report said that Wales has the highest level of teenage drinking in Europe. In January 2008, a report said that Britain has the highest teenage pregnancy rate in Europe and the second in the world, second only after the United States. And of course, of the areas of Britain that are worst, Wales comes out worst. The MP for Rhondda, Chris Bryant, reported that in 2006, 1 in 25 teenage women in Rhondda gave birth. How do you feel about that? Oh, by the way, that wasn't an unusual year. That's normal for the Rhondda Valley. How do you feel? What are the words? See, as I think about that, the word that comes to my mind is lost. It's lost. A nation, beautiful nation, a nation that sings, a nation that's enthusiastic, a nation that has a rich spiritual, religious heritage, a friendly nation. A welcoming nation, a lost nation. I can't help but think that Jesus looks upon the crowds in Wales today and has compassion because they're lost, which is good because Jesus is in the business of finding lost, so let's hope he finds Wales. The trouble is, I think that what society at large considers as lost, Jesus considers as normal, and what society considers as normal, Jesus considers as lost. There's definitely a conflict of values between Jesus' values and that of the kingdom the people around about us. But it's interesting that as you look upon Jesus, because he was really heavily criticized in his day. And he was criticized by the religious people because of the kind of people he hung out with. He hung out with thieves, prostitutes, ordinary people as well. And he had meal with them. Now, in the ancient world, Middle East, if you had a meal with somebody, you're showing acceptance. You're just showing that you're accepting that person as they are. It's a social thing. It isn't just something together. It's, hey, I think you're okay. Let's have a meal together. Let's talk. It's a very important thing. So to have meals, sit down and have meals with those. Well, the religious people wouldn't have meals with those kind of people. Certainly wouldn't let them sit down at their table. And Jesus knows this. Jesus knows he's being criticized. So Jesus turns to them. He says, listen, let me tell you a story. And he tells a story that's quite edgy in his culture. It's quite an edgy story. I'll tell you why. Because this first story is about a shepherd. Now, in our society, shepherds are cool people. They have sheep, and they have sheepdogs that run around the mountain and do very clever things. And they make put lamps on the sheep on the Brecon Beacons and put it on YouTube, and we all watch it on YouTube, and then we see these extreme shepherding and stuff. So shepherds are cool. It's one man and his dog in our society. It wasn't so in Jesus' day at all. Shepherds were looked down on as uneducated, untrustworthy. They were looked down on because they didn't mix much with people. They spend their life up on the hills with the sheep. They were looked down on. They were looked down as dirty and ignorant and irreligious. So Jesus goes and takes one of these as a hero of his story, whom he compares, as we shall see, to God. So you see, Jesus is provoking. Jesus is being quite edgy here. And He talks about people wandering away. The sheep wanders away as they do, and the guy calls for his sheep. And I think there's a resonance there with Genesis, with God calling Adam, "Where are you?" Have the shepherd calling after the sheep. Obviously, the wandering sheep are human beings, and we wander away from God. And the shepherd in this story, and it is quite a shocking story in some ways, we'll come to that in a minute, goes looking for the sheep. When he finds the sheep, he puts the sheep on his shoulder and walks home singing, "She ain't heavy, she's my sheep." That's a good song. Good title for a song, isn't it? No, it's not. Okay. He doesn't give the sheep a road map. Note what he doesn't say to the sheep: "Well, you've made your own bed, now lie on it." Never find Jesus telling people that. "You made your own bed, so lie on it." Jesus never says that to people. Jesus never says it. Jesus shows compassion because the sheep is lost. And it's all about God going looking for lost people. Now, he tells a second story. And the second story doesn't make a lot of sense to us in our culture. So I'll just quickly unpack it for you. A woman loses a coin. She has 10 silver coins and loses one. Probably the reference here is to coins that were given her as part of a dowry, part of a marriage. They are very precious. They have huge sentimental value. The Bedouin women would wear them as part of a headdress. Other women would make them into necklaces. So they weren't just kind of money she put aside for a rainy day. They were part of a very being, part of a very identity, part of her hopes and her dreams. And they were of huge sentimental value. And she loses one in the house. Now remember, the ancient houses didn't have windows. So if she lost one, it would be dark there. Suspect Welsh houses didn't used to have windows either, because Welsh word for window is ffenest, which comes from the Latin. So obviously the Romans taught us to put windows in our houses, thank them, and that we kept the name. So presumably in those days even the Welsh houses were dark and gloomy as well. So the woman's lost the coin. Anyway, she lights a little lamp and she looks and looks till she finds it. When she finds it, everybody gets thrilled and says, "It's just great that you found your coin." And they throw a little party to please her. So it's all about lostness and finding. Now, the Jewish rabbis used to teach that when a sinner repented, God was pleased. They used to teach that. Muslims teach it still today. I was listening to an imam, a Muslim imam from the north of England, speaking recently. And meeting we were all at, he was explaining his theology, and he said the same thing. In Islam, Islam teaches that when a sinner repents, God is pleased. What Jesus does is he undermines all that. He says something quite different, because in neither the Jewish thought nor in Islamic thought you have this idea of God going after, coming out looking for someone. That was new. That's what wasn't there before. The thought that God actually comes out looking, that was new. That was shocking. And of course, to have God as a shepherd was, whoa, this was walking on the edge. But Jesus says, "Listen, I tell you what's new. What you don't know is you might be lost, but God's out looking for you. God's come looking. He cares about you that much. He has come to look for you." The other religions say God will bless you once you've repented and straightened your life out. Jesus is saying, no, God will bless you before you've even started looking. He's come looking for you. He's going to bless you even before you turn to him. That's new. There's a lovely Bible verse that shows that, 1 John chapter 4, verse 10, which says, "This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins." And the idea of Jesus finally is this, that it involves restoration. The sheep is restored to the fold. The coin is restored to the collection. You come back into society. You come back out from the cold into the heart of community and start sharing your life with God and with other people. That's part of it. A lost sheep, a lost coin, a lost people, a lost nation. Just want you to think for a moment about the ugliness of our nation. Its problems, its lostness. Nation lost in drink, a nation has lost its respect. A nation given to cynicism and malice. And yet Jesus said, listen, God loves you. God doesn't want you to carry on living like you're living. But he's come looking. Because he cares.